All right, great. Welcome, everybody. We have Ori joining us today to talk about traceability. And one of the things that I actually am going to put in the chat is that I tried to do my homework today and look through the draft of the spec, which does give a little bit of a good context. And actually, that's one of the things I really appreciate about Ori. So in advance, Ori, before we get started, I definitely hope that you'll kind of, looks like we have some new folks in the call today. So if you kind of give the background and an explanation of how this is used, that would be great. To take care of the housekeeping stuff real quickly so that we can get over to Ori, I will remind everyone that we are focused on a participatory meeting that follows the Code of Ethics and Professional Conduct. If you want to refresh yourself on that, it's in the agenda. We look forward to having everybody participate in these meetings. If you are planning to be a substantial contributor, which we would really love for you to do, then please make sure you have a W3C account and that you have signed the contributor licensor agreement. Both of the links to those are in the agenda. And we keep a record of these calls. And so please know that. Please, when we are, we use the chat to organize the queue and organize the discussion. That's kind of the role that I take on today. So if you want to add yourself to the queue, you can just add queue plus and that will add you. And I'll kind of monitor that as the conversation is going. And at this point, I would love to invite anyone who is new to the community or hasn't been here for a while or just has something interesting that they want to say about the work they've been doing to go ahead and do an introduction or reintroduction.
Hi, everyone. I'm Rachel. I am part of Digital Promise, and we are working with MIT's Digital Credentials Consortium to come up with a full-stack open badging solution, and I was invited to participate in the meeting, so it's really exciting to be here. Yeah. Thank you so much, and I'm out of Portland, Oregon.
Thanks, Rachel. We do a lot of work with the Digital Promise team, so I was very excited when I got your notification that you had joined. So thank you for introducing yourself, and we're really glad you're here. Anyone else that would like to introduce themselves? All right. How about announcements and reminders? I know we have some of those. Kalia, can I call on you to give us an update on the plans for IIW?
Hi. Sure. The Internet Identity Workshop is coming up October 10 through 12 in Mountain View, California. There is a plethora of pre-events on Monday. There's an OpenID Foundation thing. There's VRM Day. There's the GFF Plugfest. And there's an Open Wallet Foundation thing that's in the planning. So stay tuned for those. If you can arrive Sunday night, it's better because you can do all the fun Monday things to do. But, yeah, it's going to be great. And we're committed to accessibility. So if you want to be there and the prices are an issue, you can reach out to us and we'll help work with you to help you get there. Happy to answer any questions. I'll put the link in the chat.
Great. It's like a month away. I'm so excited.
I know. It's crazy. It's really right around the corner. Okay.
It's amazing how quickly time is going. Harrison?
Yeah, I would just like to add that on that Tuesday, the CCG will hold a hybrid open house at IIW, but it's at 12 p.m. noon, 3 p.m. Eastern time, because IIW has the circle, right? Circle discussions at 9 a.m. So yeah, so Kimberly will be there. Unfortunately, I won't be there physically because I'm about to have a new baby, my fourth one. So so I won't be there, but I will join virtually. And if everyone is there at IIW or can join virtually, just feel free to join. I'll send out the agenda a week in advance. Thanks.
I hope that you'll be joining with a little swaddled up infant. That would be really fun. We'll have to share video though if we do that. Anyone else with an announcement reminder?
I have one, Kimberly.
Great.
This is Erica. Hi, everybody. Happy Tuesday. Friendly reminder about rebooting the Web of Trust is coming up just in a couple weeks, September 18th to the 22nd in Cologne. There are scholarships available. I will put the Eventbrite link in the chat. Thank you. That's it.
Great. Thanks. There is definitely a lot going on this fall. Anyone else who'd like to let us know about anything? All right. Well, then, I am going to go ahead and turn it over to Ori, who can talk to us about traceability. And I will moderate the queue for you. And it's all yours.
Awesome. Hi, everyone. I'm Ori Steele. I'm CTO and co-founder at Transmute. My background's in cybersecurity, and I'm a author of the Decentralized Identifier Specification at W3C, one of many authors. I'm an editor of various specifications in the Verifiable Credentials Working Group, and today I'm here to talk to you about two credentials community group work items, which is really one work item with two repos, which we call traceability or just traceability vocabulary or traceability API interoperability. However, in typical fashion, I'm actually going to have one of our team members, Ben, present this work, and I'll be here to answer any questions you might have as we go through the deck. Ben is one of our most active contributors to this work. He does a lot of the pull requests from our team, with basically Ben and Nis, who are doing a lot of the contribution to the work. And I'll pass the ball to Ben. You can give a quick intro and then do screen share and let's kick it off.
Okay. All right. I guess I'll go ahead and pick up the ball here. Hello, my name is Ben. I am the technical product owner over at Transmute. And I am an author on the traceability vocab and interop projects, I guess you would call them. And so, yeah, I guess we can go ahead and get started with the presentation. If I can find the right tab. That is. Okay, so just confirmation. Is my screen being shared?
Yes, and I can see the chat as well, although they'll probably interrupt in case there's anything to discuss. Do you want to take questions as we go through, or do you want to try and hold questions for the end?
I think it's perfectly fine to go ahead and interject as you come up with something. So go ahead and hit Q+ in the chat, and yep. I'll let the moderator interject.
I'll probably cut Ben off if I see you have a question. Let's get started.
Okay. So let's go, we're going to go with the traceability vocab and traceability interop. And so to start out, we kind of want to frame the higher level business vertical that we're working with, and that's specifically supply chains. And so supply chains are working with old platforms and a lot of old technology, as we see with the screenshot. The notepad here has, and this is where XML would be a huge upgrade over what's currently happening. But you have a lot of small jurisdictions, you have a lot of companies, you have a lot of countries. It's very fragmented and there's a lot of very narrow use cases. And so what we're trying to do is, you know, build up the scalability, build up the security, build up the trust. And one of the biggest reasons that we've added traceability onto the front of it is, you know, include that transparency. You know, where the supplier is coming from, who's responsible for what. You know, there are some times where you don't want to be completely transparent, but you want to know that someone's responsible. You want to have at least some amount of what country are they from, you know, who's responsible, is it the same person, is it a different person that's coming through the supply chain. And so the two aspects of this which we have to building off of that are traceability interop. And traceability interop is defining the API that we have a common language, we have a common understanding of. A lot of these are going to be exchanged from machine to machine. So we have a way that to say, hey, I'm going to send you these documents or these signed documents as the specific data type. Are you ready to receive it? Those kind of interactions is what we do on the interop side of things. And then on the traceability vocab side of things is more the data model of we're building the JSON, we're building the schema. There's a specific commercial invoice. There's a specific purchase order. There are documents, and what are the documents? How are they framed? What shape do they need to be in? And all these have come in with JSON-LD out of the box. So the schema enforces JSON-LD in order to have semantics, in order to be able to query over the graphs and have them all issuable for people to pick up and be able to use.
So I would just add one comment on this piece. The traceability vocabulary, it can be seen as a kind of profile of the verifiable credential specification. So it builds on the openness of the verifiable credential specification, but it also adds additional requirements that enable interoperability. So, you know, these different RDF classes that define the types of verifiable credentials. You know, in the verifiable credentials working group, you might see an RDF class for a JSON schema credential or a status list credential. Those are types of verifiable credential, but they're kind of generic types, right? Anyone could use JSON schema. Anyone can use status list. These credential types are supply chain specific credential types. And, you know, their purpose is to communicate supply chain information. So just anchoring, some of these RDF like specific details in the context of, the active work within the W3C verifiable credentials working group. Go ahead, Ben.
Okay. No, thanks for jumping in. And, this kind of covers the top high level, business aspect of it. Are there any questions or do you just want to move on?
I'll stop you if I see any.
All right. Okay. Let's keep going. So, one of the specific mechanics we have for exchanging, credentials is the traceable presentation. So the shape of traceable presentations is defined in trace vocab. And one of the things we've done is extend verifiable presentations to add a new profile on top of that. And the specific things that we've changed are the specific things that we've defined are specific to the supply chain scenario. So what we have is workflows. And workflows have a definition. So if I want to import steel or if I want to import an item into the United States, there's a specific flow that the government expects of, hey, there are these credentials that we expect in this order. Well, not always in this order, but there are these credentials that we expect in order for you to complete this process. Please send them to us. And that can be done by either governments or that can be done between businesses with businesses to say, hey, I'm sending you these list of credentials. These fit into this specific purpose, and that's what the definition is. And you can go to that link and find what the definition is. What is the policy? What is needed? How can you be compliant with respect to that workflow for that party? And then an instance is the specific case of what's being done for that workflow. So I'm importing steel. What is the specific shipment? What is the specific product? And so you can have multiple parties working with the same instance of, okay, you can have the carrier handing off to the broker who's talking to the manufacturer, and they're all talking about one specific instance of steel that's understood between these three parties.
Yeah, that's excellent. I mean, just to add another analogy here, that's not supply chain oriented, you can think of a definition as a kind of recipe. You know, you might have a cookbook with many different recipes, and the recipe will say, you know, these are the ingredients. This is how you combine them. This is how long you bake these. Then you recombine. So it's the definition is a description of some work that's going to be completed. You can think of it as a recipe. And the instances are particular attempts at the recipe. Not all instances are going to be successful. Sometimes, you know, you present a credential that's required for the recipe, but there's problems with it, or you need to make corrections. And it's in the context of that particular attempt that you need some kind of common correlation identifier. So you can say, oh, you know, I was trying to bake a chocolate cake, but I mixed the dry ingredients incorrectly. So I'm going to redo that part, and then I'm going to give the dry ingredients to the next, you know, person that I'm baking my cake with so they can try again with the correct mixture. And so there's a need to communicate this, you know, credentials over time in relationship to previous credentials that have been communicated over time. And that's the purpose of why instances exist. And you can see here the traceable presentation RDF class. That's an example of an extension to a verifiable presentation, which is sort of like in the previous slide when we talked about extensions to verifiable credentials, but this is an extension to verifiable presentations. And if you're wondering, you know, where else have verifiable presentations been extended, the DIF presentation exchange specification also extends verifiable presentations as part of its definition. Doesn't look like there's any questions, so keep going, Ben.
Okay, and that was one aspect that I think I skipped over is we have a replace of if you sent the wrong invoice to the wrong instance to say, hey, I accidentally sent the wrong invoice. Here's the correct one. Please replace this in this instance. And so here's with workflows. So this is probably covering a lot of what Ori jumped in and said ad hoc is that workflows are policy requirements that describe a desired outcome, which parties and which verifiable credentials are needed. And workflow definitions are additive. So if you're importing steel into the United States, you might indicate both a generic entry form, which is applied to everything, and then you can add the specific definition for your steel on top of that to say, okay, here is one workflow definition that applies to any and all products in this use case. And then specifically with respect to steel, here are the additive requirements for this specific vertical. And then switching back over to traceability interop. So traceability interop is a business to government HTTPS protocol. So the idea is we have an organization discovery where we include the service type in the decentralized identifier. We have a security model for API protection based around scopes. And it's an OAuth 2.0 based presentations so that you share credentials ahead of time. It's trusted business parties exchanging information with each other. We have a profile test hardness, HTTP level implementation for Postman collections. So what we do is we have a lot of Postman collections specifically around interoperability and around conformance that you can go to the repository, get the Postman collections, test them against your implementation, and check to see if you're conformant or check to see if you're interoperable. And with the parties that we have involved in trace interop, we're running nightly performance and interop tests to make sure we can constantly send presentations to each other and it works between parties and that we're conformant to all the underlying nitty-gritty aspects of the spec. Or are you giving me a chance to jump in?
I think we should probably go to the end and maybe there'll be questions once we get to some of the other pieces. I could say more about this, but I'll hold it until we have other material to look at.
Okay. And then this is a screenshot of the test suites. So the idea is that it's document user-friendly tutorials. You can go to the link, you can get the Postman collections, you can run them against an implementation, and you can be able to see what the expected result is for anything. And then these are screenshots of cross-vendor interoperability. So are vendors able to send presentations to each other? Are they able to interrupt? What parts are they able to send? What parts are still missing? What parts need to be upgraded and working? And so we're working on making this whole thing painted green. And then conformance report, you know, this is specifically, you know, are you passing all aspects of the test? What needs to change and where is needed to upgrade? And then our implementation, which is our product, platform.transmute.industries. We have a suite of tools built around implementing these standards to be interoperable.
These are community drafts, but they are profiles of standards at W3C.
Yes. All right, and I think that is the last slide, so, or if you have anything to.
Sure, so I guess one comment I wanted to make about the presentation sort of experience, I don't know if you can go back to the traceable, this will work. So in a lot of the protocols that you hear about communicating credentials, there's usually some human being that's in the loop. So if you, for example, if you're reading the OpenID Connect for verifiable credential issuance specification, which we saw presentations on like last week, that specification has a section where there's sort of pre-authorized, and then there's also a case where you want to get consent from the human user to receive a credential. So in the case where you're presenting to a party, there is a form of verifiable presentation that's interactive. And in that flow, you will get a challenge from the verifier, and then you'll sign over that challenge when you construct your presentation. And that'll prove that you're in possession of a key as the holder, and that you can sign over the challenge the verifier has chosen as the holder. And that prevents a kind of presentation replay attack. But that process is sort of expensive because the holder needs to communicate with the verifier to get the challenge. Then the holder needs to sign with some keys that are attributed to the holder. And then the holder needs to present to the verifier. And each of those, like interactions, you know, could be a whole network request, which would mean, you know, DNS, TLS, HTTP. There's a lot of overhead there. And there's lots of cases in supply chain or business communications where you don't want to get a push notification to approve every transaction that your business makes. So you might want to have some automated policy that says, you know, when I get a document from a party that I, when I get a document from a party that I already have a business relationship with, I just review the document, and if it's acceptable, I forward it to our, you know, legal department or to another supply chain partner. And so that kind of process, you have a you have an established communication channel. And you might be securing that channel with HTTPS, and you might be authenticating that channel with something like client credentials or private key JWT. These are grant types that are created for the purpose of authenticating service identities, not human individual users. And so I want to make this point sort of clear because it's often a point of confusion regarding the traceability work items. Like, we're not trying to build a system where a supply chain actor has to constantly hold their mobile phone and press buttons in order for credentials and presentations to flow. We want to build a system that you can set up secure industry standards compliant, authenticated, trusted channels, and then data can move in really high volume across those channels as quickly as possible. We want the data to reflect the standard, but the channel itself, that might not look like something you see from OAuth or from OpenID, you know, foundation in the future, because those are more oriented towards like getting consent from human individuals. And the kinds of APIs that we're thinking about for supply chain, you know, transactions are like things that are kind of closer to Kafka or gRPC, high volume, really compact binary. You set up the trusted channel, and then it is a really, really high volume pipe that operates until, you know, you take the ends of the pipe apart. So I think that's basically the main thing I wanted to say on the presentations piece. And then I have some other commentary on sort of what's been happening recently and what are the key challenges the work item's facing. But I see Harrison's on the queue. Harrison, go ahead.
Yeah, just to clarify, so when there's multiple layers in the supply chain, so every supply chain actors will just add, when they're doing addictive information, basically they're just adding on to a verifiable presentation. Is my understanding correct?
Yeah, so it's close. So first, there's the three-party model. So the issuer, the holder, and the verifier. And those get identifiers. And then they make credentials and they make presentations. And that creates these graph structures. You know, if I, as the issuer, sign some statement about this presentation today, that's a credential. If I make another presentation to the CCG in a month, and I'm the issuer of that credential as well, if you receive both of those presentations, you would see that I've made two presentations about the CCG. So you're building this knowledge graph of things that I've done, and you only have visibility into that knowledge graph if you're the recipient of a presentation which contains fragments of this knowledge graph, which are secured as verifiable credentials.
Got it. Well, what if I'm an intermediary and then I got several issued credentials and then I want to ask several informations and then reissue it, will I be am I just a presenter or can I change my role into an issuer?
So in the three-party model, an actor can play all three roles. And in a workflow setting, it's actually pretty common that a party will be a verifier first. They'll receive some credentials from some other party. They'll verify those credentials. And then they'll be an issuer to issue a new credential. So an example of that would be the SEMA license flow. The verifier is SEMA, which is an entity that issues steel import licenses. And they verify an application signed by a steel company, and then they issue a license. And there's lots of scenarios like that in supply chains today where first you sign a document and you send it to some party, and then a party reviews that document and other information they have about you. And if it's acceptable, they will then issue you a credential. So it's very common that, you know, there might be a verify first and then be an issuer second flow. It's also possible that you might be the only party that can make these claims about your product. So maybe you're the manufacturer and you have to self-attest to the quality of your product. So in that case, you'll be the producer of the artifact and the first issuer of statements about that artifact. You might hire a third party to become a reviewer of your artifact, and then you would be communicating information to that third party. They would be verifying that information, and they would issue you a third party issued credential. You can think about site inspections, you know, facility inspection scenarios where, I mean, we prefer to see a neutral third party evaluate whether a particular facility has met certain compliance requirements.
Thank you. So in what situations would the scenario described here in which, like, the presenters will add additional information on top of verifiable presentations and present again, like?
Yeah, so I might get a credential and I might present that credential with some other credentials to a new party. I can't tamper with credentials. I should have said that. I should have assumed it. But if you change the information in a credential, you break the signature. And so I can add new credentials, but I can't tamper with the credential. So I have to decide, am I going to just forward the credential as it exists? Am I going to do some form of selective disclosure or redaction and then forward it? And those are the kinds of, or am I going to add new credentials and do some redaction and forward it? So those are the kinds of operations that the holder can perform prior to submitting to the verifier. But, you know, one thing to keep in mind is with respect to selective disclosure, sometimes there's key binding that happens there, and then you can't, you can't forward a redacted document in the case that there was some form of key binding, because you won't be able to produce a signature from the key that the document was bound to. And that's an important feature in supply chain security. Sometimes you want a document that anyone who's in possession of it can further redact it and forward it along. And other times you want a document that only the intended holder or subject of that document can make presentations of.
Thank you. Thanks for the clarification.
Okay, so if there aren't any other questions, I guess I'll talk briefly about some of the challenges we've had with the work item. So the first challenge has been working with JSON-LD. We actually built tooling to make it so that you could assemble JSON-LD context from collections of annotated JSON schema. And the reason we invested in that tooling was we found it difficult to get folks to think about credential design while looking at a single large JSON-LD context. So a designer can think about just the type that they're trying to build fairly easily, but they don't want to have to think about all of the, you know, for example, all of the properties in schema.org when they're building a credential. Like maybe they just want the organization type from schema.org. So we tried experimenting with like fragmenting JSON-LD contexts and merging JSON-LD and JSON schema together. And we still rely on that tooling to build the core V2 context or the V1 context for this item. But it over time, we've kind of moved away from that pattern for credential design. And the thing that I would share about that is when you have a single credential type that has a lot of references to other subtypes. So for example, you might have a agriculture inspection report and a steel inspection report, and they both depend on organization and they both depend on inspection. And inspection depends on chemical analysis, and chemical analysis depends on certain periodic table elements and quantitative value measurements. And quantitative value measurements depend on some unit type information. And like you can see, this dependency tree starts to get like really complicated. And if you keep it all with references, then you have to navigate all of those references in order to make sense of the top level credential type. And what this looks like as a designer is you'll go to the top level credential type and you'll just see references and you'll have to kind of trace the references in order to make sense of what's going on. And this is it can lead to a lot of errors, and it leads to potentially making mistakes in how you implement it. And so what we've done is we've kind of tended to produce inlined JSON schemas for credential types. Instead of having all of these references, we kind of collapse the definition into a single file that describes the credential type. And so that making those changes has been a substantial part of the work over the last couple months. We've been inlining credentials, updating the JSON-LD definitions, and improving the quality of the credential types based on the lessons we've learned from deploying so many different credential types in the verifiable credentials ecosystem. The other lesson that we've kind of learned along the way here has been that a lot of people don't actually ever process this data as RDF. So if you are processing supply chain information as RDF, and when I say as RDF, I mean as application end quads, or as a content type that isn't JSON or JSON-LD, we don't find a lot of people who are processing or consuming credential information in that format, but we are producing these credential types in that format specifically to aid with some of these graph analysis and sort of supply chain analytics pieces. So one area that we're looking for sort of feedback from the community on is, you know, are you a implementer of verifiable credentials that's actually processing them as RDF or as JSON-LD? because if you are taking advantage of JSON-LD or RDF, then you benefit from this vocabulary. But if you are processing credentials as just JSON, this vocabulary is very much overkill for you in a lot of ways. We spend a lot of time defining term definitions and URLs for, you know, JSON-LD structure that if you're not going to use any of that, then, you know, there's a lot of work that's going into this work item that, you know, no one's benefiting from unless they're doing some transformation on the data to benefit from all the work that goes into the JSON-LD context. And yeah, I would say, you know, that has been a general area of contention in the work. You could very quickly create a verifiable credential that has very poor definitions for all of its terms. And then at what point do you stop trying to improve those term definitions? When is a verifiable credential's definitions good enough? It creates a lot of work for very little value gain at a certain point. And so what, that's another thing we've learned from this process is, especially when you have so many different credential types, it gets very hard to make each of them really high quality, to review all of the term definitions, to make sure they all have the right RDF types, et cetera. And that has also consumed a lot of work here. You know, as we've made those improvements to JSON-LD, it's improved the usability of the supply chain graph, but the bottleneck moves very quickly to other areas where, like, you just aren't getting the field. You don't really care what its term definition is. So we've also learned that JSON schema is probably more valuable upfront than JSON-LD. And then after the JSON schema is sort of working well, then we come back, we add the JSON-LD annotation, and the JSON structure looks the same, but the term definitions are getting better over time. I'm not sure what other comment. Oh, I guess one other comment is regarding verifiable credentials version 2. So version 2 is underway at the W3C. And we've already tried upgrading. And there was a lot of pain in trying to do that. So one thing that we've learned is that, you know, the version 2 upgrade is probably going to be pretty... it's going to be substantial, and we're probably not going to try and support both version 1 and version 2. So we probably will just ship a version of this, or just not. We release these versions regularly, so we probably will at some point upgrade to version 2. And at the same time, we will address several other areas that our interoperability and conformance testing has sort of discovered issues with. So, and I'm happy to talk more about, like, those particular issues, but when we upgrade to version 2, we're going to add support for status list 2021. That's the latest version of the credential status mechanism. We're also going to add support for JWT selective disclosure, which it gives an important selective disclosure capability while also meeting the, you know, government crypto regulatory environment space. In other words, not using fancy, brand new, not approved crypto. And the other place where we will probably make, you know, some changes will be around the transport protocol. So right now it's, you know, a lot of OAuth2 client credentials, and we'd love for that to be something that's higher volume than HTTP. We just don't think the HTTP model is going to address the scale problem that we see in the supply chain space. And I should also mention the scale issue is also a factor in choosing selective disclosure JSON web tokens. When you process these data models as RDF, if it's a presentation of several mil test reports, that is a very expensive RDF processing operation, because there's lots of arrays, lots of term definitions, potentially many different context URLs that have to be loaded. And you're ordering and canonicalizing all of this data, and it can take, like, you know, without any optimization, it can take minutes to finish successfully canonicalizing several mil test reports. And so we know that that operation isn't even actually necessary to transmit the data. So the JSON Web Token selective disclosure approach will happily give us a selective disclosure verifiable presentation without doing any of that processing. And all of the intermediaries won't have to do any of that processing to verify it. But some of them that are interested in the supply chain analysis or graph analysis or threat intelligence work can still do that work when they need to. And it will take some amount of time in order to import that information graph with all of its JSON-LD terms fully defined. So we want to preserve that capability, but we don't want it to be a limiting factor on the transport protocol or presentation exchange flows. Like, we don't think that canonicalizing is a requirement for making supply chain-oriented presentations. We think it's a requirement for getting a consistent view over data that you've already verified when you want to do graph analysis that relies on it. So that's a lot of technical rambling. Happy to answer any further questions folks might have.
Hey, Ori, I have a question. Can you go a little bit deeper into why you need link graph like JSON-LD in supply chain? What are the use cases? Like, how do people use like graph analysis on supply chain? Because I know JSON-LD is popular in SEO, search engine optimization, because Google actually wants websites to do it, right? So for example, our website supports JSON-LD in our pages because that's what SEO demands for. But I'm just curious, like, what are the benefits and the original intention of using JSON-LD as opposed to just simple JSON like you just mentioned in the supply chain use cases?
Sure. So first I'll give a plug for a future pull request that Manu is on the hook for, which is the value of the JSON-LD data model and verifiable credentials version 2. So there is, the working group intends to answer that question in the next version of the technical recommendation. And if you review the pull requests or issues related to that, or you see that, you know, Manu hasn't captured what you think the value of JSON-LD is accurately, please contribute to that discussion. That's going to happen, you know, in the VC data model repo. So in the context of supply chain scenarios, I guess I will just back up for a second and talk about what's the mission objective for the, from the business side. You're consuming supply chain information and you're trying to either do a values-based optimization on it. So for example, I want to buy from suppliers that reduce their environmental impact or that source ingredients locally, whatever values I might have as a supplier who depends on other suppliers, I need to evaluate the products that they're giving me and the process that goes into producing them to see if they meet, you know, my expectations or that we have alignment. And I might want to find a supplier who supports local farmers better or uses less, you know, wheat in their product or whatever it might be. So I need to understand what I'm consuming and what went into producing it in order to do that values-based optimization. And then the other side is a risk assessment. Like, there's a lot of this sugar ingredient here. Like, I don't feel comfortable with that much sugar going into my chocolate cake, you know? And so if you're doing that kind of analysis, you have kind of two options. Option number one is you can take the data in whatever quality you can get, and you're going to normalize it and process it and try and make sense of it. And you're probably going to apply a lot of hardcore statistics, you know, machine learning. You're going to build a model for handling how messy the real world data is. And then the other approach is sort of the old school AI approach where you ask your supplier to like invest in fully describing what it is they're making so you can process it in an automated fashion without a complicated statistical model. And that second category kind of aligns with the verifiable credentials as JSON-LD world. It says, I'm going to convince you to do all of this upfront work to make your data of the highest quality, and then I'm going to consume it without running it through, you know, so many heavy machine learning models so that I can like make sense of it. You can blend these two approaches together. I think the market has generally rewarded the messy data plus expensive machine learning approach. And that is definitely a factor in sort of thinking about future versions of verifiable credentials. But I think there's still value in premium brands doing the work up front to create credentials that represent statements about their product or statements a third party made about their product that are of the highest quality data inputs, and then being able to do machine processing on top of them. So I saw Brian raise his hand. Brian, ask your question.
Yeah, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about like the workflows and their definitions and stuff. I see the stuff on the left there and right there. I'm just wondering kind of what, on a more technical level, how does that work?
Sure. So, you know, if you think about the three-party model, there's the issuer to holder flow, and that's the OpenID Connect for verifiable credential issuance protocol. And then there's the holder to verifier flow, and that's OpenID Connect for verifiable presentations. And, you know, just generally speaking, when you are doing secured information exchange, it's kind of a presentation graph, basically, where you have a party presenting information to another party for some business purpose, or, you know, they're not just disclosing this information that's been cryptographically signed for no reason. They're hoping to get some benefit at the end of it, either an ability to do that values-based optimization or that risk management. And so workflows are a way of, and, you know, we use the term workflow here, but like we didn't invent the concept of workflow. Like there's several specifications that inspired our concept of workflow definitions and workflow instances. The most relevant one to this work is called BPMN, which stands for Business Process Modeling Notation from the OMG, which is the standards organization that created BPMN, but they also created like CORBA, like some older XML-oriented data transfer object, you know, standards. But those, if you've seen business process modeling notation diagrams, they have a start, they have a series of tasks, they have decision points, they emit data or they consume other workflows, and then they have an end. And you've probably seen versions of them where you have like three or four actors, and there's a channel where, you know, this guy starts, he makes this thing, he hands it to this other guy over here, he evaluates it. If it's yes, he goes to another guy. If it's no, he sends it, you know, back to the first guy. And then at the very end, the whole thing completes with a sort of success or failure status. That visual diagram is a workflow definition. It's actually called definition in BPMN, so we really borrowed from their concept. And then instances of that definition are executions of it. And in BPMN, you can actually mechanically execute workflows, either with a human in the loop or just as a purely automated workflow. And each of them gets an instance ID, and that's where instance ID concept came from. The challenging part for workflows is composability. So how can I take a workflow that's really complicated and split it into three or four smaller workflows that are really simple? And if I'm looking just at the smaller workflow that's really simple, it's probably easier for me to optimize it. But if I'm looking at a really, really complicated supply chain workflow that's just one giant definition, it's going to be really easy for there to be mistakes in there. And so this idea of workflow composability, you have to have a way of relating that two presentations are related to two workflow definitions, or a presentation is related to multiple instances. Like maybe I started a presentation and then the customer called and their requirements changed and I had to start another instance for the new changed presentation, but I already sent data along the way. So how do I relate that I started this process, requirements changed, and I have to start a new process? And that's why you see workflow definitions and instances in the traceable presentation as arrays of identifiers, because you can group like multiple definitions together by making a presentation that contains both of them. And you can do the same thing for instances. So hopefully that gives some additional detail. We've got 2 minutes left before the 5 minute warning. So I can take maybe one more question, but I'll leave it to the chairs.
Any final thoughts? All right. Well, thank you, Ori and Ben. Ben, you did a great job. This was a really helpful presentation to understanding traceability for me as I plugged through the spec this morning. So thank you both. And thank you everyone for today. And we will talk to you next week.